Welcome, good morning. Thank you for waking up very early on the last day of the conference and coming to listen to our talk about how Microsoft IT is migrating from on-premises into the cloud. My name is Jim Adams. This is Tony Bray. We're both from Microsoft IT, and specifically we're from the Microsoft IT Institute. And Tony, you want to kind of...
Yeah, so first, thank you all very much for coming this morning. We were kind of making a joke that it was 8:30 in the morning, it's the last day of the conference, you had to walk out here on the North 40 just to even find the place, but thank you all very much for coming. The Microsoft IT Institute that Jim and I are both part of was the vision of Tony Scott, our CIO, about a year ago when he said, we were persistently getting questions from our customers who would come to us and say, just tell us how you do something, fill in the blank, SharePoint or SAP or Dynamics or whatever. And the latest one became, tell us how you're moving to the cloud and tell so that we can learn from that. And as we'll go through in the next hour plus here, we're going to talk about that migration to the cloud. But the Institute was born of being able to take that inherent knowledge we have of supporting our 180,000 plus users internally and exposing that all that knowledge and information to you all, our customers. Jim and I are not salespeople. If you're looking for a sales and marketing pitch on buying technology, that's not what we're about. We'll give you a very practical guide about the things we're doing, the lessons learned that we have, that we've had over the past couple of years, as well as the things that we're very proud of. But we're pretty open about the things that we've done and the approaches we've taken. This is meant to be a very interactive session. And what you're about to see over the next hour plus is actually a snippet of a three-day course that we actually do in Redmond for customers who come out to Redmond and want to get, if you will, a behind-the-scenes immersion in how we do IT at Microsoft. So with that, Jim?
Okay. So these were in your chairs. If you bring these to the office booth where we'll be after this talk, we'll give you another one.
Yeah. So... on a plus note, this is meant to be very interactive, so please stop us at any point. We build time in for questions and discussion, so
yes.
With that, Jim.
So, we are a Microsoft customer. Microsoft IT, believe it or not, is a Microsoft customer, just like you are a Microsoft customer. And we have some similarities, Microsoft IT and how we do things, and we might have some differences. So let's go through a couple of these. So, this is fairly common. We have too much work to do, too little time, and often we are reacting to something. We're not in any form of a proactive state. We're reacting to critical events, things like that. Microsoft is a very high target for security attacks. I don't know why, but we seem to be attacked quite often from at the firewall. You might have the challenge of consumerization of IT. Who here has heard of bring your own device?
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Yes. Is that a challenge for you? Before you used to be able to lock down the type of instruments or the type of devices that are within your enterprise, but now people are demanding to bring their own telephones, their tablets, their iPads, their Android tablets, their Windows devices, and et cetera. We have a self-service model at Microsoft. Anybody that has network credentials has access to many, many of the services that we offer. And they don't have to pay for these services. They can have as many as they want. So a single person can have maybe tens, dozens, maybe even hundreds of SharePoint sites. They could ask for megabytes, gigabytes, sometimes terabytes of storage space for their group. You have IT business alignment. You have to prioritize things, and you have to partner with your business organizations. That's nothing new among other companies. We have to deploy things oftentimes more than one time because we get the software before it's ready for customers. We get it before sometimes alpha phase. There's no documentation. We get to talk with the engineers, yes, but there's no documentation on how to deploy the solution. And we sometimes have to help write the documentation so that it's complete, so that it's ready for the customers. In our last upgrade of SharePoint from 2007 to 2010, we had to go through this iteration of upgrading farms and resetting and upgrading again. We had to do that 64 times?
Yes.
64 times, because we got it maybe 18 months before released to manufacturing, before it was released. And we went through iteratively correcting problems, making sure that when the customers get the code, it works flawlessly. Money, very important. Cost reduction, do more with less money, right? Everybody has that problem. We are a company of 95,000 experts at Microsoft who think they all are CIOs and can do the job of IT better than IT.
Yes. We have 95,000 full-time employees at Microsoft, and the entire network encompasses about 180,000 when we include all of our vendors and partners and everything. And we make the joke that about 94,000 of them actually think they're developers or CIOs, given what time of the day it is.
Correct. Then there is the cloud. You can see the cloud as maybe a gray cloud, or you can see the cloud as a nice, white, puffy cloud. And we are Microsoft's first and best customer, according to us. That is a term that we use to sell the concept called dog fooding. Does anyone understand what dog food? Who has never heard of dog fooding? Yeah. Okay, good. I'll explain.
Please.
There is a saying in the U.S. that if you're trying something from, say, your mother-in-law, you eat your own dog food within your family. And this is a phrase that our Steve Ballmer, our CEO, coined many, many moons ago, many years ago, that Microsoft eats its own dog food. In other words, we use to run our business the same software that we build for our customers. And we do this way before it's released. So at any given time, we could be dog fooding 5 or 6 different products at the same time. And the people who are dog fooding this are those 180,000 or 95,000 full-time employees at Microsoft. We actually run the business on software that is not ready for prime time.
Intentionally.
Intentionally. We do this on purpose. So we do not have a stable environment. It's constantly changing. We're constantly deploying brand new software. Do you have a lot of stuff? Lots and lots of stuff. People are what we call pack rats. They don't like to destroy or delete files. They like to accumulate files. And every generation of hard drive is bigger and faster, and we don't take very long to fill those drives up. And we start to accumulate more and more files, even if we'd never use them again. If we never see them again, we still have that 60-year-old document somewhere. Well, accumulation of a lot of stuff is a common theme among all companies. But we accumulate an insanely large amount of stuff. And we have to back this stuff up every day, every week, and every iteration of the software, we have to upgrade. And upgrade is a very long process. So we have governance that tries to keep our accumulation of stuff manageable. And that's something that we'll talk briefly about today.
Yep. As we'll see as we move into this very quickly, that this insanely large amount of stuff has actually become one of our major obstacles in moving to the cloud. Jim?
Okay. So why are we even entertaining the cloud? How many of you here are contemplating using the cloud?
Yeah. Okay.
How many of you here are already using the cloud? Not very many. Okay.
Okay.
That's to be expected here in the European Union. In the U.S., cloud adoption is maybe 3 years ahead, somewhere around there.
A little ahead.
So we have to dog food our cloud. That's one reason why we, IT, is going to the cloud. Disaster recovery is built into the cloud. It's a part of the service. If you've developed a disaster recovery program for your software systems, for your company. You know that it's very expensive. Often redundancy is very expensive because you have to have the same hardware in the primary data center as in the secondary data center. So your costs multiply by two, possibly even three times. So disaster recovery is a very costly but necessary thing for your company. And disaster recovery is built into the cloud product. The cloud is less expensive. We'll get to that cost factor in a slide later on. It's simpler for IT departments to move to a cloud environment. And we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Plus, why we moved to the cloud is because Steve Ballmer, our CEO, and Tony Scott, our CIO, said it's the right thing for Microsoft to do, to show all of our Microsoft customers that the cloud is a viable enterprise platform. And the only way to do that is to jump in the swimming pool all at once. Even if it's not ready, jump in Microsoft IT and make it ready for the enterprise. So that's what we did almost 3 years ago. We jumped into the cloud pool, and we worked with the Office product group, the Azure product group, and we're working through all of the issues in making that service ready for enterprise customers. So which cloud are you anticipating using? There's a public and a private cloud. How many of you are thinking of maybe putting together or utilizing a private cloud?
Okay.
Public cloud, anyone? One or two? Okay. That is just about what we thought. So here are some companies that already use Microsoft's private cloud. We actually have data centers set up for these companies that Microsoft runs, and these data centers are extensions of these companies' data centers. But they don't have to worry about the servers, the operating systems, patching, disaster recovery, because that's all taken care of by Microsoft. We take care of the applications like SharePoint, Exchange. We take care of the escalated help desk tickets, things like that, for these companies. And this comes at cost to these companies. But these companies can then have their IT departments work more on their line of business and not Microsoft's software. So that's the model that they go on. But now that we have this very large cloud infrastructure, this public cloud that's much less expensive, these same companies are asking Microsoft, we're a very large enterprise, we're the same size as you, or we're even bigger than Microsoft. Do you have a solution in the public cloud where it's even less expensive than a private cloud? And that is where we come in with our public cloud offering. So here's a very abbreviated history of cloud at Microsoft. Around 2004, there was an experiment. It's called Microsoft Managed Services, MMS. And we had just maybe three customers that we worked with to develop a private cloud solution for them, which became this very large private cloud service that we had, that you had all those companies take advantage of. A little bit later, that became an entity at Microsoft called BPOS. Anybody recognize BPOS?
Yeah.
Yes. So that became a dedicated and a shared or public BPOS service, Business Productivity Online Services. Very, very catchy name. Then, in 2008, Office Live came about, where small companies get out their credit card and they can, from online, take advantage of some of the things that we have in BPOS, such as Office, SharePoint, Exchange, so they can have an IT department, because many small companies can't afford to have dedicated IT staff. So with just a credit card, they can get those types of services. And finally, today we have Office 365. And we have Office 365 dedicated, which is what the BPOS used to be. And we have the public, which is gaining momentum as we speak. So why would you go with a public cloud or a private cloud? Well, for one thing, the public cloud is probably less expensive, and it's scalable. It's very elastic. What do we mean by scalability and elasticity? Let's say you have a business cycle. This is your year, and in the middle of the year, you have a spike because you're, let's say, a travel company. So in the summertime, you have a very high utilization of your services, email, your websites, etc. Well, the rest of the year, you have very little activity. So with the cloud solution, you're able to only pay for the services at the level that you need. So in January through June, say, you don't have to pay for all those servers. But as the travel season comes around, you can add service, you can add services, you can add capacity, storage, bandwidth in a cloud environment. And when the summer is over, you can scale back down. So you're only paying for what you need at the time. So it's very scalable. Then we have greenfield. Greenfield means you get the latest software all the time. With the cloud solution, they have gone from an 18-month release cycle for versions of the software, like Office, to 3 months or less. And they're doing small sprints, they call them, to get features as they're being built. So you're constantly looking at the latest software, and your customers are able to use the latest bits all the time. On the private side, the advantages of private are customizations. If you have a business that out-of-box Office and SharePoint and Exchange might be okay, but you want to do special things, you have a line of business application or you're a very specialized company, the private cloud allows you to have customizations where the public cloud, you have to use out-of-the-box features. Perhaps you have security or regulatory requirements. I think that's one of the biggest reasons why in the European Union you're using private cloud. And then legacy. You might have things that, like line of business applications that are on-premise that you have to interface or have a hybrid cloud situation where you're using some parts in the hybrid cloud or some parts in the cloud and some parts still on-premise because you don't want to move those applications and infrastructure into the cloud. So if you were waiting for features to be available in the cloud before you made the jump, we are at feature parity with our Microsoft products now, which has allowed Microsoft IT to take almost all of our line of business applications, all of our BI, metrics, etc., that have traditionally been on-premise only, and we are developing solutions to take advantage of all the twin services that are in the cloud, like Azure. So everything that we used to have on-premise have counterparts in the cloud. So this is what we had, say, about 7-8 years ago. We had data centers all over the world. And this is a representation of some of the data centers where we had our office or our Exchange infrastructure, our email infrastructure. So in the Americas, we had all up and down North and South America data centers with servers. When you take a look at this footprint, it's very difficult to maintain all these services in all of these locations. Logistics of getting new hardware in place and just it was just very difficult. So what we tried to do is we tried to consolidate. As bandwidth became faster or wider and the applications became faster and more efficient, we were able to shrink this down. So today we have a presence in Seattle where we have several data centers in the Seattle area for our headquarters. We have a data center in Dublin and we have one in Singapore. So we've collapsed our services into 3 data centers, essentially, and we have cloud in the Americas. That's our footprint today. Tomorrow, in the next few years, hopefully we'll be able to add cloud in Europe, Middle East, and Africa, and in Asia. Tony, you want to?
Sure. Thank you, Jim. So a few benefits for us as we looked at moving into the cloud. Jim mentioned that high availability and disaster recovery are built into the service. And we had lower cost per user, absolutely. So this became a compelling reason. At the same time, too, and you all probably all heard, how many of you have had sales guys come in and say, you got to move to the cloud because lower cost? You're going to save a lot of money around this. It's a common thing. For us, our quick realization was there is a cost savings. But our CFO comes to us and says, you know, what are we going to add to our bottom line, or if you will, into our margins from all the savings? And our quick answer was, frankly, all the savings that we've gotten from moving to the cloud, we've taken and reinvested into more movement into the cloud. Because there is a great deal of work, and Jim's going to talk a little bit more about this, but there is a great deal of work involved in actually moving our line of business applications. At Microsoft, we have somewhere around 1,500 core business applications. And that's our most difficult move right now, is to move those business applications into the cloud, especially with considerations around data. Our low business impact, medium business impact, and high business impact data, and that became our biggest challenges. But nonetheless, there were key compelling benefits of moving into the cloud for us within IT, the social collaboration aspects. SkyDrive, who's used SkyDrive at all? Yeah. Clearly, SkyDrive has an awful lot of advantages. Our users love it. At the same time, too, as an IT staff, it presents some challenges for us. Have you tried administering it for all of your users right now? You probably said, geez, I'd like to go and restrict all the kinds of things that people can put up on their SkyDrive, and you rapidly find out that as an IT professional, you don't have that capability.
What's your biggest pain point in personal storage or files for users? Anyone? Yes.
Okay.
Pardon me?
Links.
Okay, so that's a challenge. So you have content stored in one location, and instead of sending the content to other people via attachments, you try to link them, and if they move, the links break. Is that the scenario? Yeah.
Build on Office.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so integration.
Forbidden at Microsoft, I don't know, but not with us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we're going to get a lot of questions.
Okay. Yeah. So, and another key thing for us was, frankly, less infrastructure to maintain. That was one of the most compelling things for us. Jim noted that as we started looking at the cloud and looking at the at our footprint around the world, our biggest cost, far and away, was an ever-growing infrastructure, and we recognized that we had to reduce that. So that was really our compelling reason for moving to the cloud, was that less infrastructure to maintain. If you look at kind of our approach today, Jim mentioned public and private cloud. Early on, we quickly recognized that we wanted to take advantage of cloud technology, and make no bones about it, our ultimate goal is to move as many, you know, ideally everything into the public cloud space. The cost savings are just too compelling for us. We also recognize, though, that there's some operational reality around that. We have security concerns just like you do. We have high business impact data, like our financial data right now, that our finance teams are standing back and saying, you know, that's not going into the cloud right now. That's just not happening. Our product teams are standing up and saying, you know, our source code is not going to sit up in the cloud right now. That's not going to happen. So clearly we have some of the same challenges that you do with respect to protecting data. So we've taken kind of a hybrid approach to it, where every application that we go and build from the ground up today is meant to be built for the cloud. But at the same time, too, we have somewhere around, and I'm using round numbers, about 1,500 legacy applications. Let's say about 50% of those are probably going to be virtualized and moved into the cloud. Some percentage of them, say 20, 30%, are going to be re-architected, moved into the cloud. Some percentage of them, frankly, we're just going to allow to just expire in place. So we've taken very much a hybrid approach where anything that can be built entirely from the cloud, we've moved it into the cloud. And things that can't be put entirely in the cloud right now, we've done a combination of in the cloud and on-premise. Some key applications such as our performance data right now. We're about to hit the end of our fiscal year, so everybody's worried about their performance reviews right now. This is the time of the year when we all get our reviews, and it's considered one of our most business-critical applications, especially this time of the year. Now, we wanted to demonstrate that we could take a business-critical application like that, a very highly complex one, and put it in the cloud, so we've done that. Nonetheless, the data itself is very sensitive data, so we've maintained some portion of that on-premise and taken kind of this hybrid approach to reap some benefit for movement of core business applications into the cloud, yet kept critical data on-premise in some instances and taking kind of this hybrid approach.
Has anyone... tried writing an application so far in Windows Azure and the cloud already? Anyone? You have? Could you describe what you were?
Just SharePoint apps.
Okay. Anyone else do SharePoint apps? Yet? Okay. We'll talk a little bit about SharePoint apps then. Introduce you to that. Thank you.
Yeah. But as we've moved into the cloud, one of the key things that we've started to realize with our business applications, and it is our business applications that are where we're reaping the biggest benefit, was actually teaching our developers how to go and write applications for the cloud, because suddenly the data store, you may not know where it is. It may not be sitting next to you, so you have to start making design allowances for distances and for location of things and for failover. So suddenly, just teaching our developers how to re-architect and redesign applications, like for SharePoint, and re-architecting them for the cloud became one of our biggest challenges. And that's why we've taken kind of this hybrid approach. Steve Ballmer, about 3 years ago, he stood up in front of God and the world and said, hey, with the cloud, we're all in, and absolutely. And he turned to IT and said, go make that happen. And he gave us a matter of months to do that. And now, a few years later, we are absolutely aggressively moving into the cloud. But we've taken very much this hybrid approach because we recognize that there's a lot of operational reality to getting there. Okay, quick look at security. Within Microsoft, I thought I clicked through that. I'm sorry. Everyone has the ability to go in and request a SharePoint site and build SharePoint sites. If you look at this particular one up there, you'll see that it has a data designator of high business impact. Within Microsoft, we hold three core data designators: low business impact, medium business impact, and low business impact. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that one. Let me go back to that. There we go. Low business impact. When we first started going to the cloud, some of the obvious applications that were immediate candidates for going into the cloud space were things that were low business impact. Important, but the businesses were willing to take a risk. Yes, sir. Yes, absolutely.
So the question was, did we know in advance what content would be stored in this site? And yes, I'll let...
No, go ahead, Jim.
Okay. So when the site collection is provisioned by the user requesting, they have to designate this site is for HBI or MBI or LBI. And by the nature of their employment agreement, they are bound to be a steward of that information. And we have processes in the background that audit periodically the content on, say, an HBI site to ensure that it is HBI. More importantly, if they brand their site collection as low business impact and they store high business impact documents, this audit will turn up that, and they'll get an email saying, you have a violation, please rectify this in X number of days, and they work with the security team to ensure that it complies.
Please. Absolutely.
How do you do this? Do you do it via the metadata of documents?
Yes.
Yes. The question
we use an RSA tool. So how do we do this? How do we audit a site and its content? We use a third-party tool from RSA called Archer that goes and takes a document, reads that document, and searches for patterns such as telephone numbers, our Social Security number system, keywords like credit card, personnel, things like that. And if it comes up positive that this document contains this type of keyword series, and this document is in a location that is labeled LBI or MBI, then it will send a flag and issue that warning.
Yeah.
Very good question.
No, absolutely. In addition, there are some classifications of data, and we do pretty extensive training with all of our users internally on different types of data and how to properly classify it. So the audit is certainly one mechanism we use for going back and ensuring that that sites have been properly classified, but part of it early on is teaching the users about properly maintaining data. But as we started moving to the cloud, our key candidates for some of our first business applications actually look at moving into the cloud were things that focus on LBI and MBI data, because we knew from a business use perspective, those were some of the safest to move first to demonstrate. Now, at the same time, too, I mentioned that we've taken a hybrid approach. That hybrid approach was necessary because we took some of our most complex business critical applications, things that process personnel data, things that process financial data, and said, we want to move these into the cloud, not because it would be easy, but to demonstrate that it could be done.
This is not something that we recommend our customers to do. We recommend that you take the easy ones first, learn how to write these applications for the cloud, then progressively get more complex. Since we write the back-end software systems and the tools, we take a little more liberty in, like I said, jumping into the swimming pool. So we took some of the more important and visible applications Yes. and moved them first.
In the three-day course that Jim and I teach on this at the Institute, we actually do a deep dive into the architecture of some of these key applications. But suffice to hear, take my word for it, we took literally some of the most complex business applications at Microsoft and made them some of the first apps that we moved into the cloud purely to prove that it could be done. But again, like Jim said, this is not an approach we recommend. We take just the opposite approach. If you're making your first forays into the cloud, pick something with LBI data, something that's not a multi-tiered application, something very straightforward, like something in SharePoint that could be virtualized, and get your feet wet with that first.
Yes.
In any case, did I see another question on data? Yeah, please.
So the question is this on-premise or can this be done in the cloud as well? Yes, it can be done in the cloud as well, and we did. Yeah. It is a little different than what we do on-premise. We use SQL Azure to store the metadata for the site collection. In the on-premise solution that is 5 years old now, we store this metadata in hidden lists on each SharePoint site. So the methodology that we use, we are now using the cloud full up, full fidelity. We use client-side object model calls back and forth between Office 365 and Windows Azure database to implement this. So we have this solution in the cloud and in the public cloud. So it's possible to do this in a public cloud as well. It's the same for us. It makes no difference. The question was, does an HBI site in the cloud cost more than an LBI site or an MBI site? No, it's all the same. And it's free for Microsoft users. It's not free for Microsoft IT as a customer, because there's some funny Microsoft money going back and forth between Office 365 and Microsoft IT. But for our users, It's a free service. We do not charge for Microsoft technologies.
Yeah,
thank you.
Oh, by the way, what Jim's handing out, if you took advantage of the Surface things, those are actually the covers for them.
Yeah, so these are great for Surface.
Anyways, yeah, you had a question. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, so the question is, what other solutions do we use? Not everything is SharePoint. For the cloud, we have business units that utilize the entire breadth of Microsoft solutions. Our group, Microsoft IT, in particular the collaboration services, they're taking advantage of primarily Windows Azure, SharePoint, Exchange, and in the very near future, Link, when our Link and Skype acquisition gels as far as a business.
But the principle as far as data classification holds, no matter whether it's hosted on SharePoint
right.
or whatever.
SharePoint is our primary collaboration platform. primary document repository for documents that are still living. It's not an archive. In fact, we have very strict quota limits for these SharePoint sites. In the cloud, you can have 20 gigabytes. On-premise, you can have 10 gigabytes.
We actually do that on purpose. As we're moving to the cloud, we're actually trying to make it more compelling for our internal users to want to move to the cloud. So we've taken multiple approaches to that. One is to give them more capability by moving to the cloud. The other is, frankly, to make it harder and more expensive for them to do business on-premise. All right.
Was there? Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
Okay, so the question is, if there is no cost differential between an HBI site, an LBI site, or an MBI site, why bother? Because if you do not classify, you won't get your site. And if you do not classify your documents and store them properly in the proper receptacles, you'll get nasty grams from our security team.
Yeah.
So that is incentive enough.
Yeah, for us it's not about charging people based on data, but it is protecting data. That's the most critical thing for us. For example, customer data, if our support teams who might download network traces when they're helping you, that's HBI data and has to be protected as such. You know, the worst thing we want to do is wake up tomorrow morning and read about, 5 million credit card users were exposed accidentally at Microsoft. I don't want to be in that boat ever. So that's why we get so protective about data. Okay. Let me dash along here a little bit, Jim.
Sure.
We mentioned there are some cost savings in the cloud, and this has been our experience to date, that there's not one big area where you're going to get some huge savings of moving to the cloud. But all up, when we started looking at our total amount of savings from in the cloud, all up it adds up to about 30% in total. Now, this is theoretical savings. You couldn't go to our bottom line, much to the chagrins of our accountants who would like to say, great, I can cut your budget by 30% next year. That's not been the case. We've taken the dollars that we've saved from application development maintenance, from hardware hosting, from licensing, and from our support costs, and literally plowed that back into the cloud. Our biggest challenge, or one of right now, is those business applications, re-architecting and moving many of them into the cloud. And that's redevelopment work for probably half of them. It's doing some re-architecture work. So we've taken the savings that we've reaped from our operations and from licensing and from our infrastructure savings and plowed that, at least for now, back into development work to re-architecting applications to, frankly, move them into the cloud just as fast as we can. So when we start talking about savings, for us, at least internally, it's very theoretical. For us, and we emphasize that because you're going to have a lot of salespeople, if they haven't already, are going to come to you and say, geez, moving to the cloud is going to save you this amount of money next year, and instantly your CFO is going to gravitate toward that and say, great, I can cut your budget. That's not the case. From an IT perspective, that's not the case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There will be a small rise in the number of assets that you must acquire in order to make a transition into the cloud, and that's where the next few slides will explain. So, this is the CIO viewpoint of what the cloud can do. Okay, you have all these servers in your on-premise infrastructure, and then when you move to the cloud, everything goes into the cloud, and you can save all the money, and they spend it before
you ever saved it.
You ever say that, oh, stop, wait a minute. So, in 2016, that's what we project, this scenario will be true. We will have less hardware at that time that we have to maintain. But in the meantime, here is a picture, a very high-level picture, of what we have in our infrastructure to support our collaboration environment. So in order to move to the cloud, we're going to have to add some things first. We're going to have to first add the cloud and all of the Windows Azure components and things like that in order to make this work. That is not free. However, we don't have to maintain those servers. We don't have to maintain the operating system, the hardware, et cetera, et cetera. So there's theoretically a savings there, but it's a savings on additional things that we have to do. Then we have to add an intermediate layer, We have to duplicate our taxonomy. We have to duplicate our UPA. We have to duplicate our search because we're going to have a conflict. We're going to have version 14 on-premises. We're going to have version 15 in the cloud. Search does not support both of these in a hybrid environment, so we have to have duplicate hardware for this. So this is where we sit today. We have more hardware than we ever have had before. And the blue hardware at the bottom is approaching end of life. So in the next year, 2 years, we're going to have to do something, either move to the cloud or replace this hardware. That's an expensive proposition. We'd just as soon move to the cloud than have to reorder all of this infrastructure hardware for on-premise. So in your particular case, you may not be this extreme. But for our case, where we have quite a bit of content, numerous applications, line of business applications, this is our picture. And as we move more into the cloud, and as we complete the migrations of all of these properties, we're going to be able to get rid of some of these things. Eventually, we're going to be able to get rid of all of this. And this is more of a picture in maybe 2 years. And this is more in line with what you can probably expect, but in a shorter period of time.
Yeah, as we talk about this, and we're painting this picture because we try to be realistic. I started this discussion saying, look, if you're looking for a sales pitch on moving to the cloud, you won't get one from us. We want to be very realistic about the cloud. We absolutely believe in it. We think there's tremendous cost savings. There's operations benefits to it. But it's a journey to get there.
So why don't you talk about why it's less expensive to go to the cloud.
Yeah, and I'll jump through this really quickly. Any of you all have been to Redmond, to the data center, to our R&D data center? Have you been to the R&D data center? Yeah, it's pretty neat, yeah. Jim mentioned, showed you a lot of our data centers. We do a lot of R&D work at Microsoft, an awful lot. Not just in the software space, but also in the hardware space. So we actually have an R&D data center in Redmond where we're constantly testing hardware configurations and doing latest, greatest, cutting-edge things. And one of the advantages of being able to move to the cloud is, frankly, the data centers that comprise the cloud are becoming more commoditized. As technology continues to improve, literally you go out online, you know, the data center guys, and they're ordering, if you will, pre-configured, prefab modular components where they're just shipping them in and just filling up, I call them giant warehouses of servers, server configurations. Back them up on a loading truck and drop it off and install it and with just-in-time to meet your just-in-time hardware needs. And it's this kind of advances in hardware technology that really is some of the compelling reason for why there's such a huge cost savings in the cloud. First, you've got, you know, you're buying things in bulk. But if you've walked into a latest, greatest, cutting-edge data center, you won't see the historical things that you might have in a data center from just 10 years ago. First, you don't see the giant air handlers and chillers. Like our R&D data center does not have any air handlers or anything in it. The technology just takes advantage of the ambient air just to keep things cool, which is dramatically lower utility cost. At the same time, too, we take advantage of hardware manufacturers. Today, for those of you who might have grown up in data centers 10 or 20 years ago, if the temperatures got above 72 degrees, you know, alarms were going off. And now data centers routinely run in the 90s because the hardware is meant to run like that. We take advantage of some of the advances in hardware technology, frankly, to help drive down cost.
So our ecosystem, we talked about our three data centers. So here we have Seattle, Dublin, and Singapore. Well, how much stuff do we have? Well, we have 61% of that in the Americas, 24% in Europe, Middle East, and Africa, and 14% in Asia. And we have 21 terabytes in the Americas, 8.5 terabytes in EMEA, and a little over 5 terabytes there in Asia. And this is just SharePoint, just our free SharePoint service. So we have a total of 36 terabytes, 81,000 top-level SharePoint sites, 250,000 webs. Yeah. It's insane. Does anybody really appreciate what 36 terabytes of content is? Yeah. Okay. So it's over 1.9 billion Word documents, and a standard Word document average size is about 20 kilobytes. 7,843 DVD, full DVDs. The typical T3 line is 45 megabits per second, and we figure it will take 78 days to move 36 terabytes from on-premises into the cloud if we needed to move everything into the cloud. 78 days, constant moving data at 45 megabits per second, but we know that that is only on a sunny day. Our real tests and real throughput using tools that we worked with partner organizations, partner companies, the fastest that we can migrate content, that 36 terabytes, to get into the cloud was much lower than what we had anticipated. Much, much lower. Because we do not have access to the back-end systems. I mentioned very early on that Microsoft is a customer of Microsoft, just like you are a customer of Microsoft. We do not get special privileges to take our disk drives and attach them to the servers in the cloud. We have to use the same mechanisms as you, as a customer of Microsoft, to get into the cloud. And we find that we get a throughput of 1 gigabyte an hour to move our content from on-premise, do the pre-processing, moving to the data center through the front end, post-processing, and then checkup. How many of you did the math already? 1 gigabyte per hour, 36 terabytes. It's going to take us 4.2 years to get there.
Yeah. We emphasize this point to people because we try to be very realistic that the throughput we get from moving things in the cloud is frankly the throughput you're going to
get. It's real life.
It's very real.
Because you do not get the huge bandwidth into the cloud like you might anticipate. If you have a private cloud, that's a different story.
Yes.
But in the public cloud, you have to go through the front door just like everybody else. You will be throttled just like everybody else, just like we were, and you'll get similar throughput. Now, this 1 gig an hour, it will probably improve in the next month, 2 months, as the tools go through iterations of development. So that is the story. We're finding that it's unrealistic for us, Microsoft and Microsoft IT, to move everything into the cloud.
All at one time.
All at once. So we're doing it piecemeal. The most important and most visible things first. And we're asking our customers, okay, we're not going to give you new sites on-premise any longer. We're going to sunset that service. All new site collections, all new SharePoint will be in the cloud, period. And if you have an old site collection you'd like to upgrade to 2013 and use the wonderful features of applications and things like that in the cloud, be my guest. Open up an Explorer view here. Open up an Explorer view here. Take your documents and your lists, move them over. That's our method.
Yeah.
It's cruel, but 1 gig an hour, 4.21 years, that's not something that we want to do.
We mentioned early on that we try to make a compelling case for our users to want to move to the cloud. And part of that is we intentionally did not upgrade our on-premise SharePoint applications. We're in 2013, but anybody who wants to take advantage of 2013, they have to do it in the cloud. We don't even let our users do things on-premise.
Yeah.
With the newest technology. It was a way, it's a cruel way to do it. I recognize that. From an IT perspective, though, it was one way to encourage people to go to the cloud. If they wanted the latest and greatest and take advantage of all the power of 2013 in SharePoint, and most of our users do, we said, frankly, great. We'll give you a great migration path to do that. But if you insist on doing things on-premise, we're not going to give you the latest and greatest.
So up here is a picture of what we told our CIO. Don't expect real savings until FY16.
Yeah.
That's in a couple more years.
Yeah.
We have a lot of work to do to transfer all of the line of business applications into the cloud and eventually retire our SharePoint online, our SharePoint on-premise. We will not totally kill our on-premise solutions because of the dog fooding that we must do.
Yeah.
We still make a product for enterprises on-premise, so Microsoft IT still has to dog food and test and help develop the solution for the customers that cannot go to the cloud because of regulatory reasons and et cetera. So, but maybe 90% of all the solutions that we, Microsoft IT, will be deploying from this point forward will be in the cloud.
Yes.
I think this is...
No, go ahead.
Okay. We got so, advantages of having a hybrid cloud, both on-premise and in the cloud. Migration flexibility. We can take sites on-premise, move them into the cloud. We can take content from the cloud, move them to line of business applications and SharePoint sites on-premise. We are not just a on-premise and private cloud hybrid. We are busy building a private cloud along with our public cloud, along with our on-premise. So we'll have a triangle-type hybrid environment at Microsoft because that magic word, dog-fooding our own stuff. We have to do all the scenarios. Is this something that you will do? I hope not, because it's very complex and requires a lot of people to manage. Flexible growth, we talked about this. If you have seasonal spikes in capacity and CPU, IOPS, the cloud allows you to do this for those applications. You want to put maybe your more steady applications on-premise, some of the more regulatory-based things, keep it on-premise, but maybe your utility, your generalized collaboration platform, put that in the cloud. Maybe some of the things that are seasonal, put that in the cloud. Likewise, eventually, once you get there in the cloud, you'll see a steady decrease in the operational costs. It costs Microsoft IT $534 per month to host a server in a data center. And that includes the electricity, heating, cooling, ventilation, things like that. When you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of servers every year, that's just the operational cost. So performance. You might be curious, how performant is the cloud versus on-premise? Of course, when we're on-premise, you generally have an intranet, and you enjoy relatively high bandwidth internal to your company. When you go to the cloud, you're having to go out your firewall, and you're having to navigate the internet, which has no guarantee of quality. So we were curious, how can we measure performance? So we built a tool. This is a Silverlight application that one of our engineers put together. And what it does is it fires off synthetic transactions to go and fetch a SharePoint site that we designate. And we put content on that SharePoint site that we know is there. And certain strings are looked for. Because if you try to go to a SharePoint site and there's a database problem, your IIS server will give you a SharePoint page, but it'll tell you, I can't connect to the database. So if you use a standard ping tool, it's not going to indicate that you have a problem getting to your content. So we built this tool to look for specific content on that SharePoint site and give us time to last byte. So the whole page renders, then we take a snapshot. How much time did it take? So what we have at the bottom is our SharePoint on-premise. And we call this tool EKG because it looks like a heart monitor. So here we see that most of our transactions, time to last byte, is somewhere between, maybe 0.24 seconds. And worst case, we have one spike here at maybe 2 seconds, about 3 seconds, somewhere in there. So this is pretty steady. 75% of the people will be this green line down here at the bottom, which is fairly fast at maybe 1/4 second to get the last byte. So this is best case scenario because this is our on-premise SharePoint. Yeah. Same period of time, Office 365 SharePoint, we see 75% of the people are getting about the same performance, surprisingly. But occasionally, we get upwards of 21 seconds, And those are the edge cases when the internet is not cooperating. But the important number is this green number and this blue number, which is 75% and 90% of the people will see this type of activity. And we can see that toward this time frame, which is somewhere around 10 a.m., we're getting a lot of activity. And that's pretty standard. Our day starts off very low rumble, and then as the morning progresses and people wake up and people come to work, 10 a.m. it gets high through the lunch hour, and around 2 o'clock in the afternoon it goes back down. And then in the evening, with all of the backups and things like that going, it spikes all over the place. But this is a nice picture, it's a nice snapshot of performance from on-premise to on-premise and from on-premise to the cloud. Any questions? Okay. Is this tool available? Unfortunately, it's not code that we're very proud of because it was written very quickly because we were just curious what the time to last byte was. We do have out-of-box tools that you can use with Microsoft Excel that give you very similar results. You just go to TechNet and search for EKG. And if you do that, you'll get a hit, and there's some CodePlex hints and a package that is written by the same group of engineers that allow you to do this.
That's because a little more polished.
It's a little, well, it uses out-of-box solution rather than custom Silverlight.
Yeah.
Okay? This is a very interesting slide. This alludes to an event we had not this last January, but the January before. We were migrating our Exchange mailboxes to the cloud. And we broke our intranet at Microsoft. Our firewall, we used the Threat Management Gateway, 15-year-old technology, for all of Microsoft funneling in through Redmond to get to the internet through this one little firewall. And up until now, that was fine, because not everybody had to go to the internet. But now, Microsoft had to go out through the firewall to get to their email and come back, and we broke our firewall. We had a project scheduled for the next year to upgrade our firewall because it was 15-year-old technology. We had to bring that into the current fiscal year, not do something else because we didn't have budget for this, and we had to replace all of our firewall and expand our firewall infrastructure throughout the world because we were going to the internet. We were going to the cloud. All of our Exchange mailbox, well, not all yet. We're at maybe 80 or 90,000 mailboxes using Exchange Online now. All internal people at Microsoft will eventually be using Office 365 Exchange mailboxes. And we broke our internet in doing so. So when you're planning your migration to the cloud, make sure you include your infrastructure people in the planning. Because if you have a firewall solution that may, you may break it with all of the traffic that you have to go out and back again from within your corporate domain. Yes.
So the question is?
So the question is, could you rephrase that?
How much bandwidth?
Okay. Okay. Okay, before and after the move, how much bandwidth? I'm not sure whether I can recall from the top of my head what that bandwidth was. It wasn't bandwidth that was the problem. It was the actual firewall and the number of channels that it had in the capacity of the firewall hardware. We used the Threat Management Gateway, which is a rather old Microsoft product that I don't think is no longer being supported or is being sunset. So it was the actual firewall hardware that we broke, not the bandwidth. So I don't have those numbers for you. I'm sorry. So migration considerations. So as you're considering moving to the cloud, these are the things that you must think about. Take a look at your customizations, if you have customizations. Many companies, they don't allow custom code. Bravo. But many companies, that's a necessity. Your line of business has to have custom code in order to do your business. So take a look at your customizations. You want to test and you want to scrub your custom code prior to doing any migration. Problems that you encounter in test are much easier to solve than problems encountered in production that is down because you migrated. Permissions. Make sure that your computed groups are all resolved. Computed groups. We have many, many computed groups. Groups within groups within groups within groups in the Active Directory. It will only go so far before it will break that model. Because in the cloud, they have a finite depth for the Active Directory and any dir sync. You want to make sure that you have, if you have delegated delegates in your Exchange environment, where an administrative assistant assists an executive in their email and things like that, you want to move them in pairs. They were working on the solution where you could have the delegate still on premise while you move the executive or vice versa. I believe they're still working on that fix so that you can do that. We simply had to move family groups. So if you moved an executive, you have to move their executive assistant with them into the cloud. No longer are you concerned with specific licensing of your application, your operating system, and things like that. Your licensing concerns will now shift to user licenses for suites of software. So you will license your users for individual Exchange in the cloud. You will license users for usage of SharePoint in the cloud. And it's on a per-user basis. And if you have thousands and thousands of users, there is script capability, so you can do that through scripting. It's very not difficult, but tedious to go through thousands and thousands of licenses through the UI. You can do them onesie, twosie, which is okay, but if you have a massive migration where you're doing maybe hundreds of people at a time, there are scripts available that streamline that process. Figure out what you want to keep online or keep on premises versus move to online. Some of your more important and more sensitive line of business applications, you probably want to stay on-premise until you get enough experience in migrating those applications into the cloud. Social. Very interesting. How many have used or have been exposed to Yammer?
Yeah.
Okay. A few of you. I'm sure everybody has been exposed to Twitter and to Facebook. Yes?
Yes.
No, you can't say no. No? We have one holdout for Facebook. Okay. When we moved all of our Exchange mailboxes, or when we started the move of all of our users into Exchange in the cloud, we anticipated many, many problems for the help desk. So we prepared the help desk with many knowledge base articles, and we prepared them with training. And when we started moving thousands of users every night into the cloud, we were braced for the worst experience. We expected our client satisfaction to take a nosedive. We staffed up the help desk. We didn't have to do that. We found that users, instead of calling the help desk at Microsoft, they simply went to Yammer and they solved their own problems. That was phenomenal. We didn't anticipate this. Our call volume did not go up. In fact, our call volume pretty much stayed steady as we were migrating people, their mailboxes, their SharePoint sites, their My sites into SkyDrive Pro. We found that the traffic on Yammer went up. That's a double-edged sword, because if users are helping users,
that's great.
they could be giving them bad information. So you have to monitor the traffic on Yammer and interject yourself if someone is giving someone else the wrong information. We also found that people were using Twitter and Facebook to resolve some of these issues as well. Another double-edged sword thing is if people are using social media for help desk solutions, how do you measure that? How do you measure client satisfaction then? How do you measure the time it takes to resolve an issue? Well, that took some looking around. There are several companies that do mine all of the information in the social media space, and they give you reports in real time as to user sentiment. That's something we never measured before. User sentiment. What is user sentiment? They look at the traffic on these social channels and they key off of certain words like problem or maybe some bad words, things like that. And they can give you an index of user sentiments, whether they're happy, neutral, or sad. One of the companies that we use is called Gestalt. And we use the Gestalt reporting and their data to go out into our Yammer feeds, Twitter feeds, Facebook feeds, to measure sentiment. And we have a dashboard. It's a Windows 8 tile application where we can see the trends. And we find that we know more about our service now than when we had an entire infrastructure with a system center monitoring the back end, because we're closer to the user when we're looking at the social media. And when sentiment runs low and there's a high amount of traffic, we're called into action to find out what the problem is. And in the Office 365 space, they're using the same mechanisms from Gestalt, user sentiment, the social media, to find problems much quicker than they could if they were just monitoring hardware on the back end for outages. Very interesting shift in methodologies. Preparations. I can't emphasize enough communication with your customers. Let them know way ahead of time that you're going to be migrating into the cloud. Let them know way ahead of time the type of things that they can expect. Use the cloud features and the new features of Office 365, etc., as a carrot for the users to look forward to, so they're enthusiastic about moving into the cloud rather than surprised and irritated that they're moving to the cloud. I can say from personal experience, when my mailbox was moved into the cloud, I didn't know it happened. My MySite that I had on-premise, when it got migrated into the cloud, into the SkyDrive Pro, I didn't know about it until I opened up an Explorer, a File Explorer, and saw that I had a synchronized folder now called SkyDrive Pro. I opened it up and there's all my stuff from my MySite. And it's got little green arrows now indicating that it's all synchronized. So instead of saving my documents in my Documents folder on my laptop, I just go to the next folder, which is called SkyDrive Pro. It's local on my laptop too, but it's also in the background synchronizing with the cloud. So when I go home, I don't have to take my laptop with me. I can actually, from my telephone or my tablet device or my PC that I have at home, just log in using my Microsoft credential, and I have the same files that are synchronized. Yes? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You classify the applications. I expect that you also classify data. What means that normally base or Microsoft base, everything on the assumption that all data that you have in your personal drive is not confidential.
Okay. The question was, with data classification, It doesn't stop at just the site that we are actually classifying documents at the document level, and eventually old documents become less sensitive, less risky. You're giving us more credit than we're due. We're not that sophisticated. The level of governance that we have in our SharePoint environment is the site classification, and the onus is on the individual users to classify or to store the document in the appropriate place. We don't have a massive infrastructure to support classification of a document in HBI, MBI, LBI. It has to be done organically by our users.
But with every document, if it's important or less important, is put into the cloud, accessible from any device.
That is correct. Now, we do have in place encryption. So if, for some reason, someone were to get a hold of these sensitive documents, they don't have the availability to decrypt that document. So the encryption protects that document from at the document level. Microsoft, up until I think the end of this year, this fiscal year, had a policy, if it's HBI, just keep it on-premise until we can figure out how to protect it in the cloud. Yeah. They figured it out. So starting at the beginning of this year, we're able to put any type of document that we want into our Office 365 system.
And it can be accessed from your home
computer. I didn't say that. Now, if you have your SkyDrive Pro, you will be able to access documents that are there that are not HBI, that are your documents. However, the type of document, if it is encrypted, it will the type of device that you use to access that repository will dictate the level of access that you have. So if you log in using a TPM-chipped laptop that has the certificate, you'll be able to see everything. If you log in using your iPad, less so. So the less risky or less sensitive documents you'll be able to access from any device, the more sensitive, the more requirement for the login device. Does that answer the question? Okay.
Something Jim touched on briefly. We require all of our devices, our laptops and PCs, to all have TPM chips. It's an absolute requirement, even if I take a USB drive out, it has to be encrypted absolutely at all times. We just require it.
Okay. So we've got a few minutes left. Here are some examples of some communications that we use. We try to be very friendly. We try to stand out so it doesn't look like every other communication you might get an email. And we admit our mistakes if we have something planned and it goes south or something goes hideously wrong. We tell the customer right away, we had to stop, we had to reset, sorry, we'll let you know. Communication is key to your users to develop a trust between the IT organization and the user base. Can't stress that enough. In any kind of upgrade, migration, any IT project, if it affects the users, communicate with them. I don't think it's possible to over-communicate because people don't read their emails. But if you make the emails pleasant, if you make them stand out, you'll be more successful. So lessons learned. Use any tool that you can to pre-screen, to find the errors before you do your production migration. Engage your infrastructure team very early on to avoid the problem like we had where we broke our internet access. Don't forget that. Identify send-as relationships, especially for Exchange. This may no longer be an issue if they fix this problem where the executive and the assistant have to move together into the cloud. Support your support department. Make sure that the help desk is aware of what's going on. And with social media, you'll want to make sure that you monitor the social media from your help desk and arm the people that are monitoring the social media so that they can spot people that might be talking about solutions that really aren't there. And communicate, communicate, communicate. That's all I can say. Understand your environment. Know what customizations you have. Know how your service is being used. Use measurements. There's an area of permissions that you'll want to make sure that you get your security people in on. I briefly mentioned the depth of security groups. You want to make sure that that's all cleaned up. Our AD is AD was out in the year 2000. We have a 13-year-old Active Directory. It was not in a very good condition, so we had to do a lot of rework in the AD in order for us to have a smooth migration. Dry runs, practice your migration. Treat them like production. Do it over and over again until you have no errors. Measure. And define what is acceptable user performance so that when you do the migration, you'll be able to do it and have it in an orderly fashion. Prioritize your content. Do the hard stuff first. No. Do the easy stuff first, then progress as you gain experience. Your customer's network, the SharePoint online channel that you use to move your things, that's going to be either a bottleneck or a consideration at least. There will be throttling going into Office 365, so keep that in mind. You will not get T3 access into the back-end systems. The number of site collections that you move, you might not want to move everything. You might want to do some house cleaning beforehand. Lock on the support model, figure out what social channels people will be using, and keep in mind you no longer have access to the servers or the log files or things like that. So, as a parting shot, this is not how you migrate into the cloud. You want to make sure that you do a little bit of house cleaning, and your migration efforts will be much, much smoother. And we will be available for you at the Office 365 area in the Office Pavilion for any questions. I know that we're right up against our time limit. So thank you for attending. And please fill out the reviews of the session, because that's how we get to come back to these year after year. And I hope to see you for questions and answers at the Office Pavilion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone.